This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. As always, I am your host, Shane Told, and this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to sing in a professional band. And ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased to announce that the time has finally come where we have a lead singer actually willing to talk about the sex, the drugs, and the rock and roll. His name is Scott Rousseau. He sings for the band Unwritten Law, and believe me when I say, this guy has seen some shit. Now, Unwritten Law has been a band since the early 90s. Their first album came out in 1995, and they came from the San Diego punk rock scene, you know, along with such bands as Blink-182. And in 1998, they put out their self-titled record, which was still a punk rock record, but it had elements of more mainstream music. It was on a major label, and it found its way into my hands when I was in high school, and it was a record I just absolutely loved. Now, clearly, I wasn't the only one that loved the record. The band started getting very popular, and in 2002, they put out their record Alva, which had the hit Seeing Red, which was, I mean, massive. It was number one on the charts for quite some time. The band was all over MTV. I mean, it got crazy for them. And not only did it just get crazy in terms of their popularity, it got very, very crazy on the road and behind the scenes as well. Before we get into it with Scott, I just want to say thank you so much to everybody that's subscribed, that listens every week. That means so much. And thanks to everybody who's been emailing me. It's just so heartwarming, you know, that you guys love the show so much. So one thing I'm going to ask you guys to do is real simple. If you like the show, please just tell your friends. Send out a tweet about it. Hey, check it out. Put it up on Facebook. You know, just tell your brothers, tell your sisters, anybody that likes music or likes podcasts. Help spread the word about this thing, because I'm starting to feel really, really good about the direction we're going. The Warped Tour episodes were a lot of fun. We had Jenna from Tonight Alive was a great episode. Ashley Costello of New Year's Day last week was awesome. This one, I think, I know I always say it, this one might be my favorite. So please just keep spreading the word. I know last week, too, I mentioned the Lead Singer Syndrome VIP club or fan club, whatever it is. Thank you very much for sending me the emails about that, too. We're working on it, and hopefully we're going to have some news soon about that. As always, if you want to get in touch, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Also, check us out on Twitter, @leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. We're on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram, @leadsingersyndrome. And for now, if you want to help out the show, we have the Amazon referral link. If you buy anything off Amazon, all you do is go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. It takes you to the Amazon homepage. You log in as normal, and we get 4% of whatever you buy. Costs you nothing. So please check that out as well. All right, everybody, fasten your seatbelts, because it's coming. Here's my conversation with Scott Rousseau of Unwritten Law. You can't save it.
Hello?
Hello, is that Scott?
This is.
Hey, Scott. Shane Told with Silverstein and Lead Singer Syndrome.
Oh, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. You ready for ready to chat?
Yeah, let's do that.
Dude, awesome, man. Where are you at right now?
I'm at a gas station in somewhere in the middle of Ohio.
Sounds like a great day, man.
Right?
We just stopped at a fireworks superstore.
Yeah, we did.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, we spent about $500 for the fucking fireworks.
On explosives.
Yep. So let me get this straight. You guys are still touring. You've been in a band for, what, 20-something years. You're in your 40s, and you're still buying $500 worth of fireworks.
I mean, I'm not buying them, but I'm going to be fucking lighting them, that's for sure.
That's yes, amazing.
You're a grown-ass man who like fireworks.
That's okay. Is there a couple people? Who am I talking to?
Yeah, you're talking to my baby brother and the bass player for Unwritten Law, Johnny
right,
Grew.
Right on. Cool. Cool. That's yeah, me. this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. So you guys are the first non-lead singers ever to make an appearance. Do you feel privileged?
I'm a lead singer.
No, I know you are, but is everybody a lead singer?
Well, everyone can't be lead singers, you know.
I'm a lead backup singer.
Everybody can try, yeah, man.
That's right.
Yeah, the lead bass syndrome. That wouldn't work, right?
That wouldn't work.
Yeah, it would. It would.
LBS.
Well, fine then. I'll go away.
Lead bass syndrome. So, man, I want to talk about you. You had a surgery like a month ago. How are you holding up?
Everything's green. I'm right as rain now. So, well, figuratively speaking, it's gonna be something I'm gonna have to manage forever. So I'll have to go back in 6 months, have another surgery next 6 months, surgery.
Ah, shit. Well, what is it? What's going on? Can you talk about it?
It was a stomach cancer scare, quite honestly.
Oh my God, damn, that's so horrible, man.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking, shit my pants for about 3 months there, no doubt about it.
You mean literally shit your pants because it was stomach cancer?
No,
figuratively. Yes. No, I sorry. I don't know if I'm allowed to make jokes about cancer. I attempted it. That may have been in poor.
Super funny.
It may have been in poor taste. You guys. So I guess you're on tour right now. If you're at a gas station in Ohio, I don't think you just drove out for fun or just to buy fireworks.
No, we are. Yeah, we're smack dab in the middle of our 6 week tour, 3 weeks and some change in, and yeah. We're out with our good friends, Phoenix TX.
Cool. Very cool.
And our new label mates.
That's right. Yeah. Mates. Cybertracks. Cybertracks Records with El Jefe of NOFX, taking a page out of his lead singer's book and starting his own label. How's that been so far? How did that come about?
Well, we started making this record on Suburban Noise. And for the life of me, I couldn't turn it over to Kevin Zinger. I just didn't feel like, I just felt like he was shady and was fucking up to no good. And halfway through, I released them as our label, finished making the record and shopped it to a few people. And honestly, El Jefe had gotten a copy of it, and it had all the right things to say to me. He believed in the record the way I believed in it. And that's where we decided to park our little camp.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And the most recent thing is you guys also have a new acoustic record, which just came out, right?
Yeah, it came out April 1st, April Fool's Day.
Perfect, perfect. Man, so what was the decision to do that? Because it's got, I was looking at the track listing, you know, I've been a big fan of you guys. I mean, I saw you back playing, you know, back in the 90s, of course, when I was a little kid, and loved your band ever since. So what was the kind of reasoning behind doing this now? Is it just kind of to set up something with the new record coming out soon?
It's funny as you say that because that's what it was meant to be. It was meant to be recorded in 5 days, 13 songs, and just me and a guitar.
Yeah.
And cut to 2.5 years later, it's me and a guitar and then a whole bunch of production.
Right. Well,
I wanted to make something. It was going to be just a piece to buy time in between full distorted cycles. But I just couldn't for the life of me just put a piece of shit out there that I didn't believe in, so I went all the way in and gave it my all, and yeah, here we are. And at this stage of my career and in my life, really, I just couldn't put anything out that I didn't fully 100% believe in, and so I had to believe in this, and so I had to make it how I heard it, and I wanted to make something dope. So when I'm dead and gone, and my kids listen to it, they'll be like, "Granddaddy was dope."
Granddaddy was dope. Well, it's true. And the other thing about those songs is those songs are special and those songs are important to people. Like, you know, like, you're not just going to shit out like some half-assed version of, you know, say Seeing Red or Kaylin or whatever, like those songs that legitimately have, I'm sure people tell you every day, you know, just songs saved my life. And like people have real emotional connections to these songs. So I think that decision is a really important decision.
To be honest, I only chose songs for the record that I truly believed were, because again, it was going to be just me and a guitar that were going to be lyrically and structurally, well-written or well-crafted songs, and then songs that I believed in. And yeah, so, you know, obviously Kaylin for obvious reasons, you know, some of the songs just lended themselves better to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oblivion. And we've done acoustic sets before, but so on this one, I didn't want to just do music in high places again. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to do a rock band doing their rock songs acoustically. I had to flip it a bit just to make it again fresh. And so I rewrote chord progressions. Like Nevermind's a completely different song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like there's just a whole bunch of stuff going on in there that people are not going to be expecting, but for sure.
No, absolutely. Well, I want to ask you about this because, you know, I looked at the track listing and it's mostly old songs. There's a couple new ones as well. And you have a new record coming out. So at this point in your career, is it really important for you guys to is it important? You all right, man?
Debatable.
You got a bit of a cold, huh? Is it cold there in Ohio? Is it like...
It's fucking freezing.
I'm in Toronto. It's brutal. We have snow still.
Oh, God. It's,
it was snowing this morning.
Yeah, it was snowing this morning. So I'll tell you what, it's lower. It's lower than 32 degrees.
That's awful. Fuck, man.
It is terrible.
Yeah, you guys from San Diego, I don't know. I would never leave. But let me get back to the question.
Sure.
Which is just, you know, you guys have such a legacy now. And, you know, you like records like, I mean, obviously the self-titled and Elva are, you know, your two biggest records. I'm still a big fan of like your first two albums, but you guys have a real legacy and a real fan base. Now you put out an acoustic record like this and now you have a new record coming out. Is it important for you guys to go kind of back and forth between what you're doing now and then also be like, hey, we're Unwritten Law. We're a band that's been here. We've made these classic records, these classic songs. Is that part of what you're kind of trying to say? With these actions?
No. I have no loyalty to punk rock or to this, to rock or to radio or to try to craft a song to make radio. My only objective is to make, again, dope shit. And so going into each record, it's like, what have I been influenced by? What's going to make me happy? What can I give it to you? I can hand you this record when it's done. And not have any disclaimers, like not like it should be this or it could be that. Or it's like, fuck that. When I make records, when I make music, I want to make sure I can give it to you and just go, man, turn this up, man. And that's it. So whatever it is that I'm making, I'm not following any guidelines. And I think with all art, you know, if I was painting, I wouldn't want to paint the same painting twice. It'd be ridiculous. And for me, it's like, I want to continue evolving as an artist. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. Whether that keeps fans or loses fans is not even on my agenda as well. It's like, I just want to make, again, dope shit so my grandkids think that their grandfather was fucking ill.
Right. I love that, man. I love that. And I mean, obviously you have a daughter that you've, you know, put out there a long time ago in one of your most popular songs, Kaylin, and she's become, I mean, she's definitely got her own career. Which
you
is
go, you go and how see, do I say this? Yeah, how do I say this? Your daughter's super fucking hot.
Well, this is getting awkward.
Started muchacho.
No, dude, I've known the song Kaylin, you know, since that record came out. I've loved the song, and I didn't know what it was about. At first, I thought it was about like your wife or something like that, and then. Literally, I was looking you up on the internet. Hey, what's Scott Russo from Unwritten Law doing? And I didn't know that, you know, it was about your daughter, and I didn't know that she was like, you know, a model and, you know, in Justin Bieber videos and all this stuff. How did that all come about with her career? Was that something that you had a hand in, like helping her out with?
I was instrumental in the beginning stages. I have friends in the surf and skate industry. And ASNR was happening, and my girl, Tracy Young, who works for Lost, needed a cute little girl to walk the clients back at ASR to, you know, that's where they, you know, sell big part of, it's a huge trade show for the action sports world.
Right.
So while she was doing that, she was scouted out by a modeling agency. Ironically, the owner of the agency was an Unwritten Law fan. And it started there, and, you know, she just kind of blew up. But honestly, she quit modeling, a year ago.
Oh, really?
And yeah, she quit modeling, and at the top too. She, you know, she is kind of an icon, and for her to stop, which is kind of what's going on. Well, she wanted to get into the music business, and she did. And 2 weeks ago, in between a bidding war between Interscope and Warner Brothers, she signed with Warner Brothers, and so we'll be having a Kalen Russo record coming
out
next year.
That is so rad, man.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud.
And I'm sure when you wrote that song, when you wrote that song when she was, you know, a baby, basically.
Yeah, she was 3 or 4.
You would have never thought that, right? I mean, that is like, that must make you smile every time you think about it.
Well, the first one, you know, at first it was like, you know, modeling, oh, cute, she got a little Adonis. And then it was like, you know, we're driving to Hollywood and there's billboards over. I'm like, okay, that's getting a little awesome. And then, you know, then just the covers of magazines. And then obviously, like, you know, it was always, I mean, man, I guess only a father will know, but you're proud of, unless your child's a fucking serial killer, you're proud of whatever your child does, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and,
of course.
For her to really take off and be humble and be dope with the whole modeling thing, and then to shut it off when she wanted to, and to go completely for a different thing and at the peak of her modeling and pull it off was just, I mean, I couldn't be more proud. And quite honestly, like, I've produced like 2 of the tracks on the record, and it's no joke, man. She's gonna by far and above out gangster daddy when this thing drops, man.
Right. She's always been a singer.
You know what? When she was 17, she came to me and she's like, "Daddy, I'm ready to sing." I'm like, "Cool." So I produced 2 tracks for her and said, "Go home and write lyrics and come back when you're ready and we'll record them." And right before we recorded the first 2 tracks, like, "No, I got to tell you something. These lyrics are, I hope you're not mad, but they're pretty gnarly." I'm like, "It's okay, baby." And I made 8 records about fucking partying and you know, getting your heart broken. And sure as shit, yeah, her lyrics, you know, cut straight through. And her voice is diamond. It's a bit like, there's a very pretty white girl. You know, I'm not biased by saying this. You can Google her. But she sounds like Erykah Badu meets Amy Winehouse. Very heroiny, very cool, like not trying to overdo it like American Idol or anything like that. It's very, very cool.
Raw, organic, real. Mic, yeah.
When she got on the mic, and as soon as I fucking started tracking, I was like, "Oh man, this is something." I can, you know, I've worked with 1,000,000 artists, producing and ghostwriting and doing shit. And even though she is my daughter, I'm kind of just gnarly. Like, if she sucked, I'd be like, "Baby, we might want to try something else."
right.
But as soon as she got on the mic, I knew that there was something there. So she's been crafting, fine tuning her craft, you know, for the last 4 years. And, you know, again, she locked down Warner Brothers and one of the biggest managers in the world as well. So I'm expecting big things to happen with this, and I'm really excited. And again, I could not be more proud, Pop, for sure.
That's amazing, dude. I love hearing that so much. You brought up, you know, yourself being a songwriter, being a ghostwriter. Has that been something you've done for a long time?
Kind of. You know, the first record that I worked on was Pivot's Pressure, and that had to come out in when? 95?
Yeah, maybe like that.
Yeah, I remember that band.
96. Yeah. So that was the first record that I had co-written and produced. And then from there, I worked with Anya Marina, Supergroupie, Mickey Avalon, Big B, Mike Posner. I was writing a track for 5 Seconds of Summer. I'm kind of all over the place. I have a project coming out with Danny Way, the skateboarder. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. But
he's
the dude that jumped over the Great Wall of China.
Yep.
So it's him and I, and it's called The Collective. And then we have just guest artists on it. We have Tommy Lee. We have Swayze. We have Mod Sun. We have Eddie Rap Life. We have Del the Funky Homo Sapien on it, and that should come out by the end of summer. So, I mean, all I do is music. People don't know that, but that's...
No, people don't know that. That's kind of why I wanted to ask you, because it's like, people will look at Unwritten Law, and, you know, you guys do things sporadically, but you're not putting out records every 2 years and touring the world anymore. You know, so that kind of thing is, it's interesting, because people don't know that Scott Russo is still very, very immersed in what's going on with music, and, you know, you're very up to date. You know, it's not just some like throwback band, which I think is really, really is really interesting.
Cool, thank you. Yeah. I'm like a broke John Feldman.
That's fucking funny. I wonder if Feldman would do this podcast. I don't know, maybe. Maybe. I'll tell him you said that.
He's a good dude. I'm quite sure that he would.
He is a good dude. I would love to tell him that you said that, though. I think you'd think that was funny.
Yeah, it is. It's a compliment.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. He's very good at what he does.
Yes, sir.
So I want to talk about a couple things, man. Well, the first thing is, we were just talking about how you're a songwriter, ghostwriter, musician, but you know, back in the day when I would go to Unwritten Law shows, you were a standalone singer. Like, I didn't even know if you played guitar. I didn't know if you were a songwriter. I just saw you up there, you know, running around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, now I looked at some pictures and, like, you are playing guitar on stage and you're, you know, you're, I think, pretty much for all the songs, right? And how did that transition come about? And that must have really changed, you know, your stage show and how you felt about getting up there.
Yeah, you know, we used to be a five-piece. There was no need for a sixth guitar. I do write a majority of the music. And when me and my guitar player got in a fight on stage at a sold-out show in Anaheim House of Blues, it was time to put on a guitar and fucking say goodbye to the homie. And right. That's really where it came. And that's where it felt right. That was the first time it started feeling right. It's never, Unwritten Law has never really felt quite right in my heart of hearts until this lineup now. But as soon as Rob left, you know, we asked Rob to leave, the very first show that we did, we had flown to Las Vegas as a four-piece, and it wasn't meant to be, but we had this festival that we were meant to be headlining in Las Vegas, and Rob had basically cut his finger off trying to kill me on stage. And
Jesus.
So he couldn't play the show regardless because he had to have his finger attached and it was out of cast and spikes in there, so he couldn't play. And so we went out as a four-piece, and when we all walked on stage, it just felt even and steady. And during that set, I didn't have a guitar on. It was the first time because the fight had happened actually 3 days previous to that. And so you could just feel the songs that needed two guitars and the songs that didn't. And from that point on, we just kind of made our set list around that, like what songs looked or can be held off. I pulled off by one person. What songs need two people?
Right.
And that's it, man.
So I have to ask you, what? So you got in a fight on stage. He tried to kill you, and he cut his finger off.
Yeah.
Did he try to stab you with a glass bottle or something?
No, he tried to hit me with a vodka bottle as he was running through a door, but he was kind of a big guy, a tall guy, and he caught the top of the door hinge with the bottle. It smashed as it was coming down towards me, and it sliced off half his face.
And this is during the show?
This is, it was during the show. No,
that was
directly after. During the show, he didn't know one of the songs that, you know, we had written. Actually, my kids, all three of my kids were singing on, ironically, the song was called Fight.
Uh-huh.
And my kids were coming up, and Disneyland had given us five passes to go to Disneyland.
Yeah,
so we were doing two nights at Anaheim House of Blues. So they were coming up, and they wanted to sing the Fight song, the song they sing on the record. However, Rob didn't know the record because he didn't really write anything on the record. So the weekend previous to that, we'd practice it, knowing that my kids were coming. He had it when the time came on that Tuesday night at the Anaheim House of Blues.
Yeah.
We were like, you know, here comes, we're doing the fight song. The kids are ready. You got three mics out. And Rob's like, no. I'm like, dude, I've already committed. We just said it. We're going. And we played the song. And after, you know, the song was fine. Rob didn't play because he didn't know it. So just standing at his amp, all pissed. And I look at him like, oh, Rob's mad at him. And I go to give him a hug. And he pushes me.
Oh,
and
I had a bottle of water
in my hand. And I fucking kind of gave him a little splash. And
he knocked my
tooth out. And I, boom, punched me in the face, right? So I walk off stage, and I'm sure even the Anaheim House was walking down the little corridor. And I walk down, and I'm like, fucking, that motherfucker knocked my tooth out. So I walk back on stage, and everyone's still on stage. And I walk up to him, and I'm just like, and his guitar was sitting on his amp, and he was sitting with his wife right by the monitor engineer. And like his arms crossed, like going like, what the fuck are you going to do? And I walked up to him, and I'm like, I was right to his face. I'm like, fuck you. I wrote every one of these songs, put on his guitar, played one last song, and then threw his guitar off into the audience.
Whoa.
And it was so gnarly that people thought literally it was staged. That's
right.
How it was. And again, it's from one of the two sold out nights at House of Blues. Now, cut to, I walk off stage and I go into our green room, and my fucking daughter is in the back and she's fucking bawling. This is Kaylin.
Yeah.
And she's about 8 years old. And she's crying, and I'm going, what's wrong, baby? She goes, Daddy, I'm scared. Rob came in here, and he said he's going to kill you. He says you're going to die. And then my dad was in there, too. I mean, all of our family's there, too.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, yeah, he came in and said, fucking fuck you, Pete, my dad. Fuck you. Fuck my brother. And right in front of my kids, and said he's going to kill me in front of my kids. at that point, I literally saw red and fucking was like, fucking doesn't matter how big he is, I'm going to kill this motherfucker.
Yeah.
So I saw my daughter like that. And so I, again, he's up, apparently he's upstairs in the opening band's dressing room. I start running up the stairs. He starts running at me. He grabs a vodka bottle, swings down, boom, breaks the bottle, cuts his finger off. I get dragged down the steps. And that was the last show that Rob Brewer played with us, quite honestly. And the saddest thing is for a week, my daughter felt uncomfortable. It was heartbreaking because she didn't feel safe in the house because she goes, thought Rob was going to be climbing through the windows to kill me.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. And it's funny how, like, you know, if you guys had a little blow up on stage, right, whatever, you know, and maybe even if punches were thrown, maybe you guys get past that, you know.
Yeah, me and Wade beat the shit out of each other a million times.
Right. But the second that, like, it starts involving family and stuff, that's when it all changes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was it for me. It's like to see my daughter in that mental state and at that age, you know, she was, again, 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
So it was like, that was it. And as a parent, it's like, that was it, man. Someone had to fucking die. Someone had to go.
Yeah, that's...
And that was it. And by no means, I mean, Rob was a cool guy, too. I'm not sure. He was just embarrassed or what happened. You know, his wife and his family was there. And
right.
Whatever the reason is it escalated very quickly and very violently. And at this point in our career, we couldn't be violent anymore because Wade and I had been so many fights that we had to let him go because it was just at certain points, you know, most of us were scared for our lives. You never know. It's, you know, it only takes one, you know, accident punch to someone's temple to kill someone. You know what I'm saying? And so
right. We
were just, you know, we'd already, as a band, we had been in fucking 4 or 5 fights with each other. And then, you know, we'd beat up other bands and we'd beat up stage managers and we'd beat up bouncers and we're just gnarly and we were trying to clip that out of that. And so when this thing happened, that was it for me. It was like, he's going or I'm going because I'm no longer living in fear in this fucking band. This is not rock and roll. It's not music. This is a fucking, it's like MMA or it's, I don't even know what the fuck it is, but it's not the way it's meant to be.
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, Unwritten Law, like you guys were not, you guys were a fucking dangerous rock and roll band, you know? You guys were not just, how do I phrase this? You guys, it's well documented, you guys went through some shit.
Be gentle, we'll fuck you up.
You guys will fuck up some shit. I mean, I know you've talked about guys in your band having full-on drug addictions. You went through periods of, like, where you were dating celebrities. Like, you guys have that decadent rock star thing that you led. That was real for Unwritten Law.
Again, pretty much. We're a broke Motley Crue, and I'm a broke John Feldman.
Broke Motley Crue. That's amazing. But no, seriously, like the volatility and everything in your band over the years, like that's so crazy. Like you must have just so many insane stories.
I mean, for real, man, the stories I could tell you would fucking make you not want to be in our band for sure.
No, I would be scared. It's funny when Tom left Blink and people are talking about, oh, who are they going to get to replace Tom DeLonge? I was like, what about Scott from Unwritten Law? And that's what I said.
Honestly, that was the first thing I was thinking too. And I'm like, this motherfucker.
Never gave you a call, huh?
Nah, never got that call.
Yeah, I was like, that wouldn't fucking make sense. But talked to somebody about it and it's like, nah, man, they're like, those guys are crazy. And I never toured with you guys before, but I know you guys have a reputation of being hard partying dudes, drinking, drugs, chicks, like the whole bit. And despite this being the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, you'd think every other interview would be like that. But you're really like the first guy that's open to talking about it.
I mean, that's funny. And that's kind of a comment as well. It's funny you say that, is that at this stage, my life and career, I talked to my band about it last night. It was last night? Two nights ago. And I'm like, man, I just can't do any fucking more interviews where I'm lying or saying the politically correct thing.
Yeah.
Like, because I fucking hate interviews. And, I've got nothing more to say. You want to hear what I have to say? Put my fucking record on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this isn't an interview, though. That's the thing. Like, when I started this, because I've done a million interviews myself, you know?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I don't want this to be an interview. I just want to talk and have discussion. And the amount of conversations I've had, like, I think about the Anaheim House of Blues. I can think of a specific conversation I had with somebody there one time where I was just like, fuck, if somebody was listening to this conversation, like, it'd be a fly on the wall and blow their mind. You know, and that's why I started this. So, like, that kind of shit is, like, what people want to hear, and it's what's real. and doing the long format that we do, there's no cutting shit up. There's no editing it out. It's like, this is real. And you know, it's a great place for people to be like, yeah, this is what happened. And you can tell a 5-minute, 10-minute, 15-minute story, you know, and it's a great outlet for that. So, but I mean,
I do like that. And this is a different bit of a different experience. As you know, as being a singer and doing interviews, man, a lot of those questions are very repetitive, like not a little bit repetitive, but done fucking asked 10,000 times. I've been asked some questions 10,000 times. It's like,
of course,
motherfucker, Google magic. Like, dude, like, fuck.
Right. I know.
So, yeah. So I appreciate actually your show and this time.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. But, I do, too. But shit, like, give me something. Give me some rock star shit. Because the lead Singer Syndrome podcast, we need it. We need something.
What is the question?
The question is, give me some rock star shit. That's what I want to hear.
Oh, man. I mean, again, use your fucking imagination.
But let's get a little deeper than that then. I mean, like, you talked about drug addictions, like, that must have been, was that you? Was that someone in the band? And how did that affect?
There's been a couple of us with drug problems.
And how did that affect you guys, like, trying to do, to be, you know, keep your shit together?
Well, you know, drug addiction is a disease, and it's impossible to function as a 4 or 5 person functioning unit with a cancer in your band. So, you know, some of the drugs that we were addicted to was impossible to write. People thought we were writing songs about each other when we really were just putting words that rhymed together.
Right.
And, it became impossible to tour. You know, coming, crossing state lines with drugs, you know, crossing international lines with drugs. It's like you could end our career getting pulled over with drugs. You know, it's like, a drug addiction is no joke. And it's almost been the death of this band several times. Like cockroaches, you know, we keep going.
I mean, you guys must have had some close calls.
We've definitely, I'm not pointing any names or saying any names, but we've definitely kicked a beagle at the fucking international airport when it got too close to the dope.
Whoa. That's heavy shit.
We're talking about fucking felony, go to fucking prison for fucking 20 years amount. So it's like and this is in the old days, obviously, you know, again, we're 43. I'm a father of 3. Chris Lewis is a father of 1.
Yeah.
We've been a band for 26 years. And so 26 years of craziness has really tapered down. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're a different entity now, and we're serious. And quite honestly, this is the first time in this band's career that we all mean it, and we're all sincere about it, and we all believe in it. And I can honestly say that we did not, at no time before, there was all 4 and/or 5 of us believe in this band. But now we know what we're doing now, man. And this record that you're about ready to hear, or if you haven't heard it, is to me a sure sign of just that. And the concepts that are coming in for the new Distorted record that we're doing, we're not pigeonholing ourselves in any kind of box, so we can really do whatever the fuck we want to and truly make, which to me is punk rock, whatever it is that we want to make. And that's the beauty of Unwritten Law now, whereas it used to be Unwritten Law, it used to be this terrifying fucking wrecking storm that would come through your town and fuck someone you really liked. beat up the other person you probably really liked and fucking then and do all your drugs and then leave. So it's like we have this trail of dead behind us, but that sincerely is not the case anymore. We're out here really, you know, fucking doing what we love. That's what we're doing. And that's what I think every band should do.
But you're still buying $500 worth of fireworks.
I mean, again, I didn't buy it, but I'm going to do them. Just like I didn't buy $500 worth of dope last night, but I did it.
Yeah, you didn't buy all that dope that you stole and borrowed and took from all those kids over the years, right?
Fuck with you, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, my God. Where do we go from here?
Where do we go? Yeah, right.
Feeling this.
See, you know it. You know the songs and everything, man.
I'm a Blink fan, actually. I sang all over Dude Ranch. Like,
that's right. Yeah, I think I read that somewhere. Which, because I mean, obviously, I've heard that record a million times. Which songs do you sing on it?
I'm the one that's in tune.
Do you actually recall the which songs?
I'm on Josie, I believe, and My Girlfriend.
Yeah. Lakes UL and DHC.
Yeah.
That's a reference to you.
To Unwritten Law and Dance Hall Crashers, that is correct.
There you go.
There's three songs that I'm on that record. To be honest, I haven't heard that record in so long, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure Scotty Mack can. He knows everything else about us.
Yeah, man. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the record you put out, which was the first one I ever heard, which was your self-titled record. When that record came out, it really, really changed the way I thought about punk rock.
Okay, thank you. That's
because
a compliment, right? Yeah.
It is a compliment, and I really mean it, because I was this kid. I only wanted to hear Double Time punk rock. I only wanted to hear, you know, like style of bands on like Fat Records, you know, shit like that. And you guys had that, like you guys had Double Time songs and stuff, but like you actually could sing, you actually had good production, you know, and it was very, very much different than other stuff that was happening at the time. And I don't know if you realized that it was or not, or
it was a conscious decision, quite honestly, is when Epitaph was happening, we were very much wanting to be a part of that family. Then it started getting a bit out of control with Fat Records, and every band, it was a cookie cutter sound. Everything sounded the same.
Yeah.
As soon as that started happening, again, I guess in a truly punk rock spirit, as we could not go with the grain. I couldn't. And so we started pulling away from it and basically alienated us from the scene that brought us up. But in the defense of that theory, it gave us longevity and it gave us respect. You know what I'm saying? So now it is possible for me to go fucking do this crazy acoustic record or go make a fucking failure record next or do whatever it is that I want to do. To me, that's punk rock. And to me, that's being a true and pure artist. And that's all I really want to do. Because again, at the end of the day, it's really about what you leave behind on this earth. And for me, it's like, I want to make sure that I wasn't just a cookie cutter fucking microwaved artist or musician. I did something and I stuck to my guns and I did things the way I wanted to, and I made music to what I wanted to hear. And that's exactly what I'm doing until I take my last breath, mate.
Right, dude. No, I can respect that. And what you said about alienating people, you know, I'll be honest. I was 17 when that record came out, and I hated the fact it was on a major label. Like, people, I couldn't give a fuck now what's on a major label, what's on an indie label, whether you're on Cybertracks or Interscope or Epic. I don't care at all, and I don't think kids care anymore either. Like, fans, I don't think they care.
The whole sell thing is done. Yeah.
Right, but back then, that made a difference. People didn't like Unwritten Law because they thought it was too corporate. And because Kalen had, you know, turntables in it. Like, you know, that shit must have been a struggle for you guys when you guys were looked at like almost like sellouts, when really you were doing the opposite, because you could have made a Double Time cookie cutter Fat Records punk record.
I could not have said it better myself, and thank you for answering that question. And it's exactly what we did, is we went against the grain, which is what the spirit of punk rock is. And to this day, you know, the same thing goes. And that was another deciding factor, quite honestly, with going to Cybertracks, is we know what we did when we did that. It was a conscious decision. And you got to imagine, you're talking about, you know, four or five punk rock, you know, kind of white trash kids from Poway, California, with no money. And at first we stuck to our guns. We stuck to our guns for the first, you know, two records.
Right.
And like, no. But then when someone flashed fucking $1 million or $2 million in front of your face, all of a sudden that fucking punk rock shit goes out the window.
You
know what I'm saying? It's time. It's fucking Miller time. So.
No, man, it's San Diego. You got way better beer than Miller. Come on.
Yeah, I know, but it's a commercial. It's a joke. Forget it. Fuck it. We weren't still, even at that point when we quote unquote sold out, we weren't making songs to make it to the radio. We just were making songs that we thought sounded good and what we wanted to hear. And Kalen, actually, in particular, wasn't a track made for Unwritten Law. It was a track. It was a song that I'd written for my daughter, just as a gift to let her know how much I loved her.
Yeah,
and that I could play it to her every night, whatever. And my A&R heard it, and he goes, "That song's making on the record." And thank God that he did hear that record, because that was our first top 20 single, and that was the song that made it possible for us to have longevity and to continue to put out records, because if I wouldn't have had her, if we wouldn't have written that song, then we would have been dropped from our label, and that would have been the end of Unwritten Law's career. But in retrospect, in hindsight, if it wasn't for that girl, that little girl in that song, man, you know, Unwritten Law wouldn't be here today.
That's really cool. That's a beautiful thing, man. That's a beautiful thing. I'll tell you a quick story. I remember I was listening to a shitty radio station here in I was in a rental car actually, because I smashed up my car, and I was listening. I never listened to the radio, but they had this one hit wonder segment on the radio, and sure enough, Seeing Red comes on the radio. And I was like, ah, fuck. Like,
how wrong are they? We have 5 top 20 singles, motherfuckers.
But you know what? Like, it's there's that bit of that reputation. People say, oh, yeah, I remember that band. Aren't they the Seeing Red band?
Yes.
And,
yes,
like, sure. that must piss you off, because you guys have done so much more, and you were, like, you know, you were part of something much bigger, and then you were part of your own thing that was, you know, and you still are here. And those other one hit wonder bands from the 90s that were actually one hit wonder bands are finished, you know? So that pissed me off. But that song was, I mean, we have to talk about that song. I mean,
sure.
It's an incredible song.
I think it's an all right song.
I think it's
a great song.
It's, you know what, though, man? It's part of why that song has, you know, okay. When you're writing a song, and I know you understand this because you're a songwriter and you write for other people, like, there's a way to be like, okay, I'm going to write a verse, I'm going to write a chorus, and I'm going to write a bridge, and I'm going to figure it out.
Yep.
That song has so many elements that are very unorthodox.
Yeah, that's exactly correct, which is why I was like, why the fuck do they want to choose this song? Because, like, as you so eloquently put it, most songs go verse, chorus, bridge, chorus,
yeah.
Exit. And this song in particular goes verse, chorus, ending verse, which is very unorthodox. And when Tom Wally, the president at Interscope at the time, he's like, this is a single. I'm like, man, this isn't a single. This single is like, trust me. And of course we trusted him, and thank God we did, because then we were, you know what's worse than being a one-hit wonder? Being a no-hit wonder.
Sure. That's very true, man.
So, you know, he made the right call, as he should. That was his job. And that song did very well for us. That song literally put us on the map. You know what I'm saying? In a global aspect.
Right.
Yeah. It was number one for 4 weeks, which is something I'm very proud of, to be honest.
It's an amazing track, and I still throw it on all the time. And the reason,
thank you very much.
The reason is it's got, like, you know, you say, and I know he's a songwriter, you understand this, like, there's structure and there's things that are, like, scientifically,
yes,
are there that make a good song, right? Like, there's you can use your brain all you want, but there's something about that magic, and the fact that it's unorthodox, and the fact that it has something to it, is what made it so much special than every other song, you know, that was out for those, you know, 4 weeks when it was number one, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, I just you wrote that song?
Yeah, front to back.
Cool. I also love that the first chord of the song is like a tritone. Do you know what I'm talking about? Isn't it like, it's like, you know, like whatever interval it is, like a flat five, you know?
I mean, I don't speak Spanish, but I'm pretty sure you are correct.
Yeah, I just think like that is so, I think it's so rad. And I was like proud of you guys. Some of my friends that liked you guys thought you were sellouts, but I fucking loved that song so much.
But I didn't.
I didn't. I had your back. And not just because I'm talking to you right now.
Amazing, man. Very cool.
Dude, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, man, but we've covered a lot of ground, that's for sure.
Cool.
So do you guys have a release date for this, you called it a distorted record, which I loved?
Well, just, we're not going to call, I mean, who knows, maybe we'll call it a distorted record, we call this one acoustic.
That would be actually kind of cool, but no, I knew what you meant when you said distorted, but I just thought it was funny to differentiate between the records.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, this one, the full band, you know what I'm saying? Whereas when you listen to this record, you're going to see that there's some songs, there's no bass, you know what I'm saying? And,
right.
And some songs, there's no drums. There's, you know, there's MIDIs, and there's samples. There's crazy shit going on in there. The only consistent thread throughout the whole record is there is an acoustic, the acoustic guitars is the foundation of it. Other than that, the production is all over the place.
Right. I'm trying to look at my notes, see what else there is. What else you got to tell me? Anything else interesting?
You know what's interesting is Ohio's going to be interesting tonight.
Where are you guys playing tonight?
Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio.
What venue?
Grog Shop.
Oh, the good old Grog Shop. Yeah, that place is all right. Are you going to incorporate some pyro into your show tonight?
You know we are now.
Yep. Let's get. You got to get banned. Have you guys been banned from a lot of venues?
If I said no, I'd be lying.
So which ones?
We've been kicked off the Warped Tour 3 times. We've been yelled at 2 or 3 times by Live Nation on this tour alone. And the thing is we haven't even been bad. It's like, it's just the reputation precedes us. So it's like, we leave a beer on the floor or something like that. And it's all unwritten law, destroyed a fucking other dressing room. It's like, what the fuck, man? It's like, dude, I was going to say, we literally, you know, just to save face at this point, okay, we have to clean up our green rooms just to cover the tracks of the trail of dead that we've left, you know, in our whole career.
Trail of Wade.
Trail of weight.
Yeah, no, you guys must have been through so many agents, booking agents and management and stuff, like just screaming at you and like quitting on you. It must have happened all the time.
We've had a couple people quit and we've fired a couple people. But yeah, we've been on like 4 or 5 major labels. We've been on, you know, 3 independent labels. We've had several management changes. We've had several agent changes. You know, a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I just mean with your volatile lifestyle, you know, on tour, it's like, it's, you know, it's what happens. But I mean, I guess people know when they get into it with you guys that there is that volatility.
Which I think, to me, quite honestly, like, it would be the fun thing. I mean, this is what Jenna Beta says, and she's she's El Jefe's wife and the owner of the label.
Right.
Everyone wondered, like, oh, you know, you're picking up unwritten law. Be careful, those guys are fucking crazy, whatever. And it's dope because she sees the real lesson. Her, you know, she's told me that her answer to other people when they say that, oh my God, how's it with unwritten law? We heard their nightmare. And, you know, she openly says that we're the easiest band to work with and her favorite band to work with on the label by far. So
nice.
I mean, to me, that speaks volume. And it shows that we have grown up again. It's like, we're just, you know, we love doing what we're doing and we love playing music. And so we're trying to be on our best behavior, but again, we are unwritten law.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Well, hey, dude, thanks again, man. It's really, really nice speaking to you. As I said, like it's funny. I was at my parents' house today and, I was talking to my mom and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm interviewing, guy from a band. Oh yeah. You probably remember, like, I had the t-shirt when I was a kid and unwritten law. She's like, you used to have the poster. Is he the guy with the was he the guy with the cigarette in his mouth and the poster? And I'm like, yeah, that's him. She's like, oh my God, that's so cool. You're doing such a cool thing. That is, you know, you get to talk to your childhood, you know, because I had that poster on the wall with, like, the, you know, the five faces or whatever it was.
Yep. With the cigarette. Yeah, my mom wasn't stoked on that poster either.
That's funny, man. Hey, all right, real quick before you go, you got one story for me, and then I'll let you head over to the Grog Shop.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you a little rundown of this tour.
Okay.
So, why don't we start with today? No, this tour started out starting in Los Angeles 3 weeks ago. Our drummer missed the very first show and one of the biggest shows at the Palladium. He got caught in traffic, couldn't make the show. Last second, we had to call our good friend Dylan Howard, who's played for Unwritten Law and played for everyone else, to pull up and fucking played our set at the Palladium. By the very last second, we pulled it off. And we were meant to be on a bus. The bus driver didn't pass his medicals, so he couldn't drive our bus. So at the last second, we're scrambling for a fucking whip. We have a friend of a friend who was meant to deliver an RV to that very Palladium show. He never showed up. So we had to make our way to Arizona, the second show or the third show, excuse me. When we get there, he shows up. He's on heroin and speed, and the rental agreement of what he proposed to rent us didn't match up.
Well, he didn't even show up that day. We played in Phoenix.
Oh, he played in Phoenix.
Still wasn't there.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then I dislocated my shoulder.
Yeah, okay, so he didn't even show up to that third or fourth show. He shows up a day later. And, but let's cut to the night before. Our guitar player, Chris Lewis, and also Phoenix guitar player, Chris Lewis, same dude, plays the Phoenix TX set.
Yep.
Second song in our set, fucking trips, hits his shoulder on a wall, dislocates his shoulder fully, has to be rushed to the hospital, second song in. So our legendary guitar or tour manager Scotty Mack from Australia knows all of our songs better than we do. And stepped in and played the whole set. Cut to the next day, the RV finally shows up. It did not look like the picture. he's like, yo, man, I have four bunks in the back. I put a recording screen in the back. Fucking did this to it, did that to it. None of that happened. He has a dog with him, and Chris is allergic to dogs. and now cut to, he's here. He comes clean. Yo, man, I'm kicking dope. I'm like, you know, and I'm just talking to him as a parent. I'm like, man, you know, he can't be transporting dope across state lines. First of all, secondly, I have three kids. Chris Lewis has a child. You got to be safe. What do you want? He came clean. He's like, honestly, he's like, I got 2 grams of fucking H shelved right now. And if you don't know what shelving means, it means it's hidden in your butt.
Yes, I know.
And he goes, and I'm trying to kick heroin and speed. And I'm like, okay. He's like, but don't worry, I'm super safe driving. I'm like, yeah. So inevitably, the very next day, we drop him off the airport, send him home, and commandeer his RV. And throughout the course of that, we found needles on here. We found some speed on here.
Oh, my God.
Me and my baby brother, Johnny, have broken out into some kind of rash, and we can only guess it's mites or bed bugs from this fucking disgusting RV. Now, cut to like a week into the, or 5 days into this, the very same RV, we're driving through Kansas, and the fucking, I'm not joking, literally the back half of the roof rips off while we're going down the freeway.
Oh my God.
And we're heading into a storm, so like, what the fuck? So maybe they're just like a piece of plywood where the roof used to be, and where the top vent is, the vent is completely ripped off. So there's a huge hole in the middle of it. So we had to go to a Home Depot and buy a whole bunch of basically liquid rubber and fucking tarmac the fucking top of it, so it'd be waterproof if the storm would go
through.
And the hits just keep on coming on this tour, man.
It still leaks.
Yeah, I'm not going to joke, but wow. What are some other good? I mean, that's thus far. Am I missing anything?
No, that's the. That's the first week.
That's week one, dog.
Well, so, yeah, man. It's always an adventure with Unwritten Law, and you know what? I'm with that kind of shit that seems to follow you guys. I guess you're so used to it that you just laugh it off at this point, and you're just like, bring it on. What's next?
Yeah. The next day we laugh about it. You shake it off like Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, like everyone. For the first time really wants to be here and really believes in not only ourselves, but each other. So it's like, we will ride this bitch till the wheels fall off straight up. And we truly just want people at this point to listen to our music. You know what I'm saying? And
absolutely.
That's it. Every night that we play like it's our last show. We play with our heart and soul. And I can't say that for every band. You know what I'm saying?
No. And that passion you guys have is fucking real. And you guys are real, real dudes, and you don't sugarcoat shit. You don't, you know, politically correct is not your style. And I've always appreciated that, and I've always understood that, and I think a lot of people, other people do too. And that's what's kept you guys around, is you guys are fucking real.
Cool, man. I appreciate that compliment, and that is exactly how we feel.
Absolutely.
About
well, hey, you guys, you know, still, be safe. I hope the wheels don't literally fall off on that thing.
Wish for thinking.
Take care of yourself, take care of each other. I hope to talk to you again sometime, and I can't wait for the new record.
Yeah, my phone roommate, use it anytime. Thank you so much for your time, and one love, buddy.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys.
No, man, take care, bro.
So there it is, my conversation with Scott. Some pretty wild times still going on in the Unwritten Law camp. They might say they've grown up, and maybe they have quite a bit, but it's still getting pretty, pretty crazy right now on tour. They're still on tour, so go check them out. Great band, great live band, and some tremendous songs as well. If you like this episode, go tell your friends, go share it on social media. Please help spread the word about this podcast. I know it's starting to get big, it's starting to get popular, but we're still growing, so anything you can do to help, I really do appreciate it. As always, I'm going to leave you with some music, and this was a very hard decision for me. I couldn't just pick one song, so I'm going to play you two songs. The first song is the big hit, See in Red, which we talk about a whole bunch in the podcast, so I really wanted to make sure. I'm sure you guys already know the song, but if you didn't, I wanted to make sure you knew what we were talking about with some of the references to the song structure, and of course the intro chord being a tritone, which is very, very unorthodox. The second song is my personal favorite, the first track off the self-titled record. It's called Harmonic, And I just love the intro with the tuning. That is like such a genius idea. So here are the songs, See in Red, and right after, Harmonic by Unwritten Law. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week.
I'm seeing red. Don't think you'll have to see my face again. Don't have much time for sympathy, 'cause it never happened to me. You're feeling blue now. I think you bit off more than you could chew, and now it's time to make a choice. And all I wanna hear is yours. Try to compromise, 'cause what you say